Hey everybody, I'm Jennifer, compulsive overeater. Really grateful to be here tonight and see all of you. Thank you, Judith, for asking me to speak. And hey, it was great to hear your story and thank you for sharing. And I might quote you a couple times in my talk as well. So I really like the format of speaking of what it was like, what happened and what it's like now. But I wanted to also qualify and I've been in OA since August of 2011, and I've been abstinent since February of 2012. So it took me about 6 months to get abstinent, and I'll share about that later. But, you know, starting out with what it was like, I do like to start my story by saying that I'm adopted. And so it really started when I was born, and I won't go through all the years, but I really think I was born a compulsive overeater, and I was also raised by a compulsive overeater. And, you know, my mom identifies as one of us, even though she doesn't go to meetings now. And I'm pretty sure my grandma was a compulsive overeater because she was still dieting and wanting to lose weight when she was in her 90s. And I felt like that was so sad. Like, you know, it's like, when was my dieting career ever going to be over? That's what it made me think of. And so, you know, that's what I grew up with, was, you know, in a compulsive overeating family where, like, I was an overweight child, and that was like the focus of my family. Like, it was like literally the elephant in the room. You know, it was always about my weight. I was never thin enough. I don't really know if I was that overweight as a child, like, you know, thinking back on it and looking at pictures, because, like, you know, I was never teased for my weight. I was never made fun of. I was never held back, but it was never acceptable. Whatever my size was never acceptable. And my grandma would say really mean things to me. Like, you know, we would go to Wisconsin in the summer because that's where she lived. And it was, you know, it was like 80 degrees and 80% humidity in Wisconsin in the summer. It was really hot. And she would, and I would say, oh, I'm so hot, especially growing up here where it's mild temperature. And she's like, well, if you weren't so fat, you wouldn't be so hot. You know, just really hurtful things, which I completely internalized. Like, I thought, yeah, she's right. Of course. Like, if I was thin, somehow I wouldn't be hot, even though it was hot. So just, you know, it was really painful growing up that way. And, you know, I was on my first diet when I was in fourth grade. I had to go to a pay program, and it was humiliating. It wasn't, you know, humbling. It was humiliating. I went to, you know, a diet program, and it was all like middle-aged women and me trying to lose weight. And I was never very good at losing weight. And I don't think, you know, a fourth grader should have to try to lose weight, actually. But, you know, that was what I grew up with. And then, you know, as soon as I got to like middle school, and then, you know, there was the peer pressure, then of course, like, I would go on really severe diets and, you know, starvation kinds of things. I remember being jealous of the, you know, the bulimic girls, the anorexic girls, because I'm like, I could understand that we had the same issues, but I couldn't make myself throw up, and I couldn't like starve myself that much. But it was kind of a sad statement of where I was with, you know, with this disease. And it was also my coping mechanism as a kid with, you know, a pretty stressful family. My parents were divorced. My mom, you know, had a lot of issues after my parents got divorced, which, you know, put a lot of responsibility on me as a kid. So, you know, so that's, you know, that's what it was like when I was a kid. And then, you know, going off to college, and again, all the girls, and, you know, everybody was so skinny, and it was all about, you know, body size. And I, you know, I couldn't stop eating, but I wanted to lose weight. So then I would overexercise, and it just, you know, it was just this vicious cycle. After college, I did go to an OA meeting, like in the early 1990s. I was living by myself, and I just could not stop eating. I would make these big dishes of pasta. And I was like, oh, this is going to last me for the next week. And I would just eat it all in one night. And I knew there was something wrong with that. And I remember I even called my friend's mom, who was a nurse. And I just said, there, you know, there's something wrong with me. I can't stop eating. And I don't remember if she mentioned Overeaters Anonymous or if I found it by myself, but I went to a meeting and I didn't want to identify. I didn't want to stay. It was a, you know, it was a like a focus meeting for gay and lesbian people. And I went to the meeting and I'm like, nope, this isn't for me. Like, you know, I should be able to figure this out. It's just food and weight. Like, it can't be that hard. So I didn't come back to a meeting for like almost 20 years because I was going to figure it out. And for those 20 years, it was, you know, always trying to lose weight, overeating, going on a diet, just my whole life revolved around that. And it made my life really, really small. And then, you know, what happened, which is kind of, I mean, this is like the thing that got me into OA, was in 2011, I had like a stressful situation at work. It was really like a really disturbing situation at work. And my only idea for how to deal with all those feelings was to go on a diet. Like, I'm like, oh, I better go on a diet. It's like the one thing I can control, something I can do. And I ended up like going on a diet, a diet program I had joined 10 times before. And I ended up gaining 10 pounds really fast. And I'm like, there is something wrong. Like, you know, like here I am going on a diet and gaining weight. And so then, of course, I had to like take it to the next level of like, oh, I'm going to do hormone shots and only eat 500 calories a day. And then for sure I'll lose weight. And I could just see the insanity of that, or know the insanity of that. And so I had kind of OA in the back of my mind. Someone had told me about OA, you know, 3 years prior to it. And so it always was kind of in my mind. And so after that, you know, insane thing that happened at work and how I just couldn't cope with the feelings, I came to an OA meeting, which was the Tuesday night North Seattle meeting, which I still go to. And I walked into that meeting in August of 2011, really, really hot. Nobody told me it was because I was fat, that it was, you know, so hot, like my grandma used to say. And, you know, again, I didn't want to identify. Like, I'm like, I don't want to stay here. I don't want to hear anything. I just want to like check this off the list. And so I went to the meeting and I remember somebody there wanted to offer me like, you know, CDs of a book or something. And I'm like, I'm not going to take those because she just wants me to come back. And this, you know, she's trying to rope me in and I'm not going to take those. So I didn't take them, but I did come back to another meeting. And I haven't left since then. And, you know, I got a sponsor right away. And, you know, I worked the steps. And it's interesting because my first sponsor was somebody who, like, I picked her because I thought she'd be really easy. I didn't want to work very hard. I just wanted to work through the steps and get all the information. So I worked with a sponsor and it didn't really work out with her. I made it through like step five with her. And then I needed to find another sponsor. And I thought that, you know, I'd get to start on step six. Like, I'm like, well, I've already done the first five steps. Now I get to start on step six. Well, this sponsor is like, no, we're going to go through the big book. And not only are we going to not start at step one, but we're going to start at like the table of contents and the preface and the foreword and the second foreword. And I'm like, we're never going to get to step one even. Like, I just wanted to do everything as fast as possible. But what was so good about that way of going through the steps was that, you know, it took months to get through step one. And that's what I needed. I needed that time just to get like a good foundation and really get reminded that, you know, I'm powerless over food and that my life is unmanageable, because I really thought that like my life was fine. And if I could just weigh 125 pounds, my life would be perfect. Like that, like I was blown away with step one where it said that.
That was 10 minutes, Jennifer.
And okay, thanks, Robin. Like I was really blown away when I first read step one and it said, you know, if I could just get to the perfect weight, my life would be perfect, because that's really what I thought. And I didn't think my life was unmanageable. Like, you know, I had a good marriage, good friends, good job. But what it was like the unmanageable parts of my life, I would just turn to food or to dieting. Like it was, you know, one extreme or the other. I had no tools for dealing with my unmanageable life. So I really learned that by taking my time going through step one. And then, you know, going through steps two and three and learning about a higher power and relying on a higher power, that helped me a lot. I had, you know, a pretty good idea of a higher power for myself, but I would have never asked for help with food. Like, you know, like I think I learned as a kid, like, you know, it's like, you know, God has bigger things to worry about than me and my food. Like that just seems like, you know, such a minimal thing to ask my higher power for help. But, you know, I learned a lot about a relationship with a higher power, which has helped me a lot. And, you know, I worked the steps. It took a really long time to go through all 12 steps the big book way, but I just got a foundation and got really, really ingrained in my recovery. And now, like, you know, what it's like today is that, you know, my life is so much bigger and better than it was. And, you know, it's fuller. And, you know, I know the first speaker talked about like not being connected with people and like having like a, I think she said wax paper between her and other people. And I really had that before OA. Like I have a really tight circle of friends and there's like six of us. And I always felt like it was the five of them and then me on the outside looking in. Like I never really thought I was a part of those, you know, six women. And, you know, now I have that connection with them. And, you know, I feel part of way more often than I don't. I mean, I still have those moments of feeling left out, but it's not the same as it used to be, for sure. And, you know, like this whole idea of connection, which is what I really kind of wanted to focus on tonight. And, you know, thinking about gratitude too, is that, you know, like I have better connection with myself. And, you know, I have to be abstinent really to be connected to myself, because when I'm not abstinent, I'm not connected to anything really. I'm like disconnected. And, you know, so, you know, I have more connection with myself, connection with the higher power, you know, connection with my OA fellows. That is like so important to me. And that has really saved me during, you know, the past 2 years with COVID, is staying connected to people who really know me. And I think people in this program know me better than, I mean, my friends know me well, but like you guys know me really, really well. And, you know, the safe container of these meetings where I can share and be honest has really helped me a lot. You know, I like to share that, you know, when I first started sharing in meetings, I would never share about anything personal. Like it was all about like work and being too busy at work and like just like safe things. But then, you know, to get more comfortable and to be able to share has really helped me like open up and be more vulnerable. And, you know, it's like, it's a little bit daunting that I'm supposed to talk right now for 30 minutes, because I used to not even be able to talk for 3 minutes. I thought that was like forever, speaking for 3 minutes. So to talk for 30 minutes, you know, we'll see if I get there that long. But you know, it is a great opportunity to really share and to really get into like the details of, you know, what I do and what things are like now. You know, I stay connected to fellows with, you know, partners in recovery, and, you know, I have different partners in recovery for different things. Like, you know, my like partner in recovery who like works in the same industry as me, or a partner in recovery who, you know, like overworks, or, you know, is over busy, because over busyness is a big a thing for me, or, you know, things about feelings, because I have a really hard time expressing my feelings or knowing how I'm feeling. So I've got a partner in recovery for that. And that really helps me a lot. And that is another way that I stay connected too. I also wanted to share about gratitude too, because it's, you know, attitude of gratitude tonight. And I love all your backgrounds that say gratitude. That looks really nice. And it's funny because I was trying to look for a reading in For Today or Voices Recovery about gratitude. And there's these great indexes in the back. And there's one that happens to be the For Today reading for today, November 23rd. And I actually had to look at the calendar. I'm like, is that really today? And this is the one that I want to read. It was kind of like a higher power moment. So I'm just going to read this for today and just kind of share with you what it means to me. But it says, you pray in your distress and in your need. Would that you might pray also in the fullness of your joy and in your days of abundance. And that's Khalil Gibran. With the accumulation of days, months, and years of abstinence, it is easy to forget the pain of compulsive overeating. The expression of gratitude for blessings received keeps alive the awareness of who I am and where I came from. When practiced daily, prayer and meditation become a channel through which consciousness of the presence of God in my life is heightened. This consciousness not only comforts me in times of stress and trouble, but it gives new dimensions of peace and contentment to the joy and freedom of recovery. For today, prayer can be only thank you, which is as appropriate in my need and distress as it is in my abundance and joy. And for me, it's like, it's just, I mean, the gratitude of this program is amazing. And I do forget the pain of compulsive overeating. I mean, I think, you know, now, like when I worry and stress about my food, it's not painful. It's more that, you know, I want to do better, and I, you know, I want more recovery, and I want more like spiritual recovery. It's not that, you know, like I'm hurting myself with food the way that I used to. And, you know, it's just amazing, you know, like I like to be reminded of where I came from. And I think that really comes, you know, from talking to newcomers, and, you know, I love that we continue to read step one, and just, you know, just that reminder of what it was like before, because it is painful, and I don't want to go back there. So that's why I keep coming back. And, you know, to just talk a little bit about how I work my program, you know, I go to at least 2 meetings a week, hopefully more than that. Like I try for more than that. I have a sponsor, I have sponsees. I also, sponsor women, through the 12-day sponsorship, which I highly recommend. 12-day sponsorship is fantastic. And for me, it also keeps me in step one, which I think is really important for me, and really helpful. So, yeah. And then I think the last thing I'll share about, I know I'm not going to get to the 30 minutes, but the last thing I'll share about is just the tools of the program. Cause I talked about how, you know, before program, all I had was, you know, dieting or compulsively overeating. And now I have the tools of the program, which is, you know, like the telephone. I phone and text OA fellows all through the day, which really helps me stay connected. I go to meetings, like I said, I sponsor, I, you know, read the literature, I do writing, I have a plan of eating, I have an action plan, and I do service, and anonymity as well. So, I do try to touch on all of the tools. And I think, you know, what I'll say about service is that it gets me out of my morbid self-obsession. So when I'm doing service, like, you know, sharing with you right now, I'm not in my head about, you know, food thoughts, body image thoughts, weight thoughts. None of that is, you know, in my head at the moment, which I'm really grateful for. So I do service at, you know, the meeting level. I speak when I'm asked to speak. I do that level of service. And, you know, I think service is even, you know, answering an outreach phone call or making an outreach phone call or sharing at a meeting, you know, offering to be the timer at a meeting, like all that kind of service helps. And, you know, service.
Speaking of time, it's been 10 minutes. You have another 10 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Robin. So, you know, like there's different ways to do service and it helps me feel part of too, because that is a lot of my disease is keeping me separate. So, you know, being of service makes me go to meetings and, you know, kind of forces me to get there, even if I don't want to go. And it just helps me to be part of, which, is all of, you know, going back to the connection as well. So I didn't make it for 30 minutes, but I made it for 20 minutes. So I think I'll go ahead and stop there. And I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody has questions.